Hi, I'm Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. Today is Wednesday, February 19th, 2014, and this is the 14th episode of the show. You can find the show at theastrologypodcast.com, and you can also listen to us on iTunes. My co-host today is California-based astrologer Kenneth Miller. Kenneth is a graduate of Kepler College, and he specializes in Indian astrology. His website is celestialintelligencer.net. Our topic today is the subject of birth data collection and the general debate over whether it's better to use celebrity birth charts as examples or the charts of people you know, like friends or family members. So with that introduction out of the way, Kenneth, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. I've been meaning to for quite a while now, so I'm glad we finally did it.
Yes, me too.
Okay.
It's always fun talking to you.
Before we get into our main topic of discussion, I just had a few pieces of news that I wanted to run through and announcements to make. So the first one is that Jeffrey Cornelius and Maggie Hyde are going to be speaking in New York on March 28th, 29th, and 30th. They're going to be doing a series of seminars on astrology, the practice of astrology as divination, at the Edgar Cayce Center in Manhattan. And this is being organized by Adam Ellenboss through his Nightlight Astrology School. So if you'd like to find out more information about it, you can go to nightlightastrology.com. Other than that, there's three big conferences this year. One of them just took place, or the fourth actually just took place in Australia. I think the Australians just had a conference in Tasmania last month that was successful from the sound of it. And I wanted to mention three conferences that are coming up this year, just for people who might be interested in attending. The first is the Northwest Astrological Conference. They're having their big 30th anniversary. It's been 30 years of having conferences there in Seattle, and this is going to be a big one. So that's from May 22nd through the 26th, 2014, and I'll be giving two lectures at that conference, so I definitely recommend attending it. The second one is the Astrological Association of Great Britain is having a conference September 12th through the 14th, 2014, in Wyboston Lakes, which evidently is near Cambridge. And then finally, the third big conference this year is the International Society for Astrological Research is holding a conference in Phoenix, Arizona, from September 25th through the 28th, 2014. And this, at least in terms of the U.S., will be one of the big conferences of the year, and there's a lot of people speaking there. I'll be giving two lectures and a workshop, so I'm actually really looking forward to that, and I hope to see a lot of people there. Finally, one other piece of news. I've recently finished recording several new workshops for my Introduction to Hellenistic Astrology course. One of them is on the basic techniques of Hellenistic astrology, so it's actually a pretty comprehensive lecture that is 13 hours long. It's basically a workshop. Then another one on the Arabic parts or the lots, such as the part of fortune and the rationale for it. And then another one on using the triplicity rulers of the sextplate to determine eminence in a person's chart. So I just added all of these lectures to the course. And if you're interested in, there's been a few people who've asked me to do more episodes of the podcast or what can I do to help support the podcast. And really, the best thing you can do if you want to help to support this podcast is to sign up for one of my online courses, because having people sign up for stuff like that helps me to have time to and sort of resources to do other things like this podcast. So definitely sign up for one of those courses like the Hellenistic Astrology course if you're interested in seeing me do more episodes of this. Finally, Kenneth has a new course that he's about to start teaching through Kepler College on Indian astrology for Westerners. So Kenneth, could you mention a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's going to be taught through kepler.edu, and it's a 10-week course that will basically, by the end of it, allow someone to be able to do what I hope. I mean, my ambition is that by the end of the course, they'll be able to do a, you know, rudimentary reading of a chart using the Indian style and Indian rules. It's designed with the Western astrologer in mind, although really if you had little or no background it would also work. I mean, I'm adding extra components to the course for people that are brand new to astrology, that people that know something about astrology, you know, won't need to review or watch. But it will take you through, you know, basically surveying the major techniques of natal analysis and predictive work.
Excellent. That sounds really good. And when does that begin?
Begins the first week of April.
Okay, so people can go to Kepler's website, which is kepler.edu, in order to find out more information or sign up for that.
Yes.
All right, excellent. Well, then let's get started with our topic today. And our topic is the general issue of birth data collection, but also this specific debate that comes up sort of every once in a while in the astrological community about what type of birth chart is the best to use as an example. And this came up for me recently because I've been recording all these new lectures on specific techniques from my Hellenistic course. And this led me to build, I realized I needed to build a better library of specific example charts just in order to demonstrate how to use some of these specific techniques. And so I went about basically going through some of the different birth data collections, not just my own private files for clients or people I know, but also looking through things like Astro Data Bank for celebrity birth charts and trying to find out what celebrities we actually have birth times for or which ones we don't have birth times for. So this led me to become more familiarize myself with this whole issue of birth data collection and actual repositories like the Astro Data Bank website of birth data collections. And it also brought up this interesting sort of practical issue, which is what astrologers should put more emphasis towards in terms of when they're trying to demonstrate astrological techniques, whether it makes more sense to use the charts of people you know and what the pros and cons of that are, like people you know, like your friends or close friends or family members or people that you can actually talk to and interact with, versus using the charts of famous people or celebrities who have stood out or have done something important or notorious in the world in some way. And I noticed, I brought this up in a discussion forum, and I noticed the astrologers are a little bit divided on this. And there's different astrologers that seem to go more in one direction and less in another, or seem to emphasize certain points in one and other points in another. So I thought we could have a discussion about that. So why don't we start off by just, how do you feel about that issue? Do you incline more towards using personal charts or celebrity charts?
Well, that's a great question. And I incline more to what I call the charts of ordinary people.
Okay.
And I've always inclined that way because I find my argument for that in terms of teaching astrology is that typically celebrity charts are too easy to read. And when you learn astrology and all you're looking at is famous people, and then you do the chart of your cousin, you know, what seemed very clear in Madonna's chart now seems very muddy. You know, most people have a mixed life, and that's tougher to see astrologically than someone who's got a stellar, you know, famous life.
Sure.
So I think there's a place as we get on, as we continue this discussion, I'll get into it. I mean, I'm not totally against using famous people, but I think that when you're learning astrology, focusing on ordinary people will make you a better astrologer because it just sharpens your reasoning ability as you kind of sort out the mixed bag that you find with normal folk.
Sure. So that becomes one of the pros and cons of both of those, that famous people or celebrities, that they tend to have specific things in their chart that really stand out. And sometimes they tend to manifest or take some of their basic chart placements to their fullest extent. Whereas for some normal people, things may be a little bit more nuanced or a little bit more complicated in terms of how well they fill out certain placements in the chart. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So let me just give you an example, and then maybe we can get into more of the pros and cons. I had a teacher in India who was teaching us what in Indian astrology is called yogas. You know, they're basically aphorisms that, you know, certain combinations produce certain kind of results. And he threw up two charts. And he said one of these charts is an internationally known speaker and author, and the other one is also a writer, you know, published writer, but nowhere near, you know, is not, you know, nearly as famous, not nearly as wealthy, is just, you know, he's written a couple of books as a as an adjunct to his normal career, which was something else. And so we went through trying to figure out which chart was which, and it was a very interesting exercise to kind of see, like, oh yes, you can see that both of these people have an inclination to write, but the famous person ended up being Deepak Chopra, and his chart was just, you know, exemplified that much more so, whereas the chart of the ordinary person who had two books published in his field, you know, it was a much lesser success. And that stuck in my mind as a great teaching thing about just like putting up two charts and having the class kind of work out who is what.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, that becomes one of the benefits of using celebrity charts, that they do tend to exemplify certain techniques or certain placements much more dramatically. But then I guess one of the points then is it becomes much less practically useful when you actually try and take what you learn by going through a bunch of celebrity charts and dealing with people that are all, that are high profile or extraordinary individuals, and then attempting to do what astrologers are doing most of the time in terms of their actual practice, which is working with normal people that are not necessarily extraordinary or are not necessarily well-known or celebrities for some reason.
Yeah, I think in the old day, the quote-unquote the old days, you would – and I think this applies east and west. I mean, you can clear – certainly it's in the Indian material, and you can tell me about the Hellenistic. But there's – you know, when authors are writing their delineation texts, they tend to be kind of over the top in describing, okay, you know, Venus is in the – you know, in Taurus, it means this, and it's – you know, they use a lot of dramatic language, and it was so that the person reading it would sort of memorize the principle.
Right.
Even though in real life, you might rarely have an extreme manifestation of that, or there are always, you know, in astrology, there's always mitigating factors, right? I mean, there's 12 times 12 times, you know, 12 factors and more, depending on what you're throwing into the chart. Mm-hmm. I think maybe our modern version of that is the celebrity chart. Like, here's a celebrity chart that really exemplifies a particular manifestation of a configuration.
Right.
And so kind of memorize that. But, you know, if you see that in someone else's chart, you know, it may not have the exact same stellar results.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's a good analogy, just because that's one of the things that often does turn people off, like especially modern astrologers that are trying to look at a text on traditional astrology, like medieval or Hellenistic or an Indian text, is that they will tend to just state extreme manifestations of a specific placement. And sometimes that comes off as way too either improbable or sort of off-putting, because it's going to that extreme when most charts will have multiple mitigations occurring one reason or another. Yeah, so that's a good analogy. So... okay, so in defense then, let's go. So you're going to take the more personal charts as being a little bit better. So I'll just, for the sake of argument, defend celebrity charts.
Please do.
For the sake of this debate. And so one of the things that I would defend celebrity charts with is that the lives of celebrities, especially the high profile the celebrity, tend to be much more well documented than normal people. And in some instances, for example, you have biographies that are written about them, or movies, or sometimes their diaries are available. Like, for example, Kurt Cobain's diary was published after he died at some point. So in some instances, you can have much greater insight into a celebrity's life than you can with a normal person who, for the most part at least, their lives tend to be much less well-documented because there are fewer people that are focused on them, or a few people that are paying attention to them, so to speak. So that's one argument I would make for celebrity birth charts as a useful approach to take when looking for example charts.
Okay.
What do you think? I mean, would you counter that?
The Kurt Cobain, I mean, you know, first of all, I think we're both, this isn't a black and white. We're passionate one side or the other. I mean, I'm going to say for reasons when we get to the ordinary why I think that's quote unquote better. But I think there is a place for the celebrity chart. And in examples where you have someone's diary, I think that's gold. I mean, you have really how at least their perception of their own life. You know, there's your life. Mm-hmm. And there's what other people perceive it to be, and there's what you perceive it to be. And all three of those things can be slightly different. But I think it's gold to have someone's diary. Now, in the case of a lot of famous people, we maybe don't have that. And all we have is kind of people looking in from the outside and making judgments. And I think the danger of some biographies and movies is, you know, especially if the writer is good, things can be conflated with reality, you know, imaginary conversations, you know, this is how it might have gone. But, you know, as we read it or as we watch it, you know, we take it in as if it were real.
Sure.
And can we know, you know, especially with modern celebrities, can we really know what's going on in their personal life? You know, I mean, things may look great, but...
Right.
You know, who knows? Unless some tragedy becomes public.
Right. That is definitely one of the major downfalls, is that you are, with celebrities, oftentimes looking at it from the outside, from the perspective of whatever news or information happens to be available to you, whether or not that's an accurate depiction of that person's life. Like, for example, often dealing with like tabloids and things like that, that can sometimes be speculative or can sometimes just make things up. In terms of facts about a person's life, and it often doesn't necessarily tell you how they're feeling about it or how they're experiencing things, in the same way that if you have a close friend or something, you can speak to that person and actually talk to them and learn about not just some specific event that occurred in their life on a specific date, but also how they felt about it and how they reacted to it, and what that period of their life was like to them in terms of their subjective experience of it. I guess I don't want to set this up as a debate, because both of us, I think, take more of a middle ground position in terms of, I think, both celebrity charts and personal charts have their place. So really the point of this is more to just discuss the pros and cons of each rather than to debate it necessarily.
I mean, I think it's where I come down on the issue is if I could only have one, what would I pick? Mm-hmm. And I would pick ordinary people, because most of my clients are ordinary, and that's how I'm going to sharpen my skills. As I mentioned, it's just, I mean, and this isn't something as we're talking, I realize, you know, it's a belief I have that celebrity charts are easier to read. I should really have some, you know, give a set of charts to my students and say, okay, here's a set of 10 famous people, and they're famous in different areas, but they're, you know, very famous.
Sure.
Can you identify what they're famous at? Because my feeling is that it would be relatively easy to do that, but I don't actually know. You know, that just might be a false belief. But I mean, it just seems like when I've gone through celebrity charts, it does seem like, oh, wow, you know, no wonder Madonna is as famous as she is, or these people are as famous as they are, because they just have these prominent fixtures that you don't get with ordinary people, or if you do get them, they're mixed with a bunch of other factors that kind of bring down so that they're not quite as well known.
Sure. Yeah, and I guess if I had to come down to it, I would probably maybe go more towards a side of using celebrities more, just because they do tend to be more interesting, and at least in terms of using them as an example, like to demonstrate something. So you're basically trying to convey, you're trying to teach a technique, essentially, anytime you're using these example charts, whether it's in a lecture to like an audience, or whether you're teaching students in a course, or whether it's in a book or an article, the purpose is that you're usually just trying to demonstrate how some astrological technique or principle works. And one of the things that happens is with celebrities, usually at least you have like a baseline of, if it's a famous celebrity, you know who this person is, and everybody has a general understanding of what they've done. Like if you mention like Barack Obama right now, everybody has a general idea of who he is. Different people may have different personal subjective beliefs about, you know, what he's doing or how good of a job he's doing, but at least there's a certain baseline and everyone's kind of clued in about who that person is as soon as you invoke their name. Whereas with a personal chart, at least for the purpose of demonstration or for an example, no one has any idea who you're talking about, and therefore it requires a lot more explanation. You have to explain a lot more about who that person's life is and what the backdrop is in order to be able to successfully demonstrate what you're trying to convey about the technique. And I feel like sometimes that requires a lot more work on your part, and that there's something that will always be missing, because you, the astrologer who's worked with this chart, has probably done a lot of work looking into this person's life, and you have sort of an intimate familiarity with it, so you understand the importance of using that specific example, whereas everyone else doesn't, or only understands it to the extent that you clue them into it.
I am so happy we're coming down with a difference here. So this is great. I would argue that I find that because people have a bunch of ideas that they bring to the chart. So you bring out Obama's chart, people already know something about Obama's life. Mm-hmm. And now they're going to filter everything about that chart through what they already know.
Sure.
And they're going to ignore some things, and they're going to pay attention to things that jive with what they already know. When I put out the chart of an ordinary person, it really forces, and I'm talking about, in certain teaching things. When I give the chart of an ordinary person, all they can bring to the problem is astrology. They can't benefit from any biography that they might know or stuff they've heard on TV, or things they've seen.
Sure.
They just have to kind of rely. And that's why I find using the chart of ordinary people, my argument is with my students is it sharpens their ability to be able to actually do readings on normal people when they're confronted with the ordinary. I don't find that it requires more work, because it's just, for me at least, because I just give whatever I need to give about the person. When I first started as a professional astrologer, I don't do this anymore, but for the first several years, when someone would inquire me about a reading, I would say, why don't you send me your birth data, and then send me a couple of highlights or significant or things that happened in your life that you thought were fated, just so I can make sure that the birth time kind of matches your life. That's what I would ask for. And sometimes I would get back pages of detailed personal history. So I have this set of charts where I have this like detailed biography of an individual. I don't know why I brought that up, but that's something you don't even have to really ask for it, and some people will just do it, and it gives you a lot of research material, especially if they're like good with dates.
Sure.
And I guess we'll get further down in our talk. We'll get into some of this data collection and the ethics of using ordinary people and things like that. But I haven't found that it's any tougher. I can explain someone's life in a couple of minutes, just like I can explain someone's famous life in a couple of minutes. But what I find is what I'm avoiding is all the stuff you're bringing to the chart automatically.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really good point. All right. So two counterpoints then. One of which is that it's still possible for the person to have biases when it comes to people they know, especially the closer the person is to the person, the more there might be certain biases that they're bringing to the interpretation of their life, at least to whatever extent we're talking about things other than just actual specific events that occurred in the life. But if we're trying to actually characterize the quality, if a person's talking about one of their parents, for example, they might be having their interpretation of their parents' life and the significance of it or the quality of certain events might be filtered through whatever their experience is and their synastry is or what have you with that specific parent and what they think about them, or like their friend's life and if their friend is in some career or in some relationship and they don't think that that's a great relationship and therefore they filter it through that lens or what have you. So some element of bias is still possible. And one of the things that's tough about using personal charts is that the audience then is forced to completely rely on you as the reporter of that person's life. And if it's not I guess I'm thinking about this in terms of if I were to write a book tomorrow or what I'm doing right now, writing a book on Hellenistic astrology, and I'm trying to use charts, and some of those charts, you know, you almost want people to then go and be able to research and verify if what you were saying about that person's life was correct. And sometimes I write or use certain charts with that in mind, that this can be verified or falsified.
Let me interrupt here. I think that is a great use of famous charts, so that someone can – this is where, as exemplary examples of certain principles, using a famous person who, that someone can read a biography or do some online research and find out more about their life and see how these principles work out. I think that's a good use of it. I'm talking about when I am teaching people how to delineate natal charts, I think it's – I side more with the ordinary chart examples because it forces them to think more astrologically and rely less on what they already know about the person bringing in as a filter. I think your counterpoint was great in that, yeah, there's always going to be bias. Whether I'm giving you a client I have, you're getting my perception of it. But any famous person we have, I mean, I think no matter what, there's always some bias there, to a greater or lesser extent, depending on the person and the personality of the astrologer and, you know, what your relationship with the person or what you know about the famous person or whatever. But I think, yeah, if I were writing a book like that, I would probably do a mix of famous and ordinary. The strength of the ordinary to me is it just sharpens astrological judgment because it requires you to juggle, you know, a few more a little more complicated factors and make more complicated decisions. Sure. Like I say, I know a lot of people that have been studying astrology as a hobby for years and years. And then you give them a chart to read and say, hey, this is the chart. It's a, you know, 35-year-old woman who works as an attorney. You know, give a one-line thing and they look at it and they're like, they draw a blank. I mean, they're so used to famous people, it's hard for them to like do an ordinary person. So that's the context where I think the ordinary chart is valuable.
Sure.
I mean, they're both valuable, as we're saying.
And I mean, even aside from biases with celebrities, there can be major issues also sometimes just about whether or not their biographies or the facts about their lives are correct. And in some instances, you will see some famous people or some celebrities falsifying events about their lives or certain things in order to control their image. And that definitely becomes a major issue that astrologers have to consider as well when they're dealing with celebrity birth charts, is whether, you know, the facts that we know about their lives really are facts and whether those are accurate representations of their life. For example, I was trying to research the rapper Eminem's birth data recently, and I was trying really hard to get a hold of his birth time. And I found out that some of the charts that people were using about 10 years ago, closer to when he started becoming really famous, when he first got in a major record label, they wanted him to appear younger so he would appeal to a younger audience. And so they were actually putting out, they were saying he was a few years younger than he actually was, and they were giving out a false birth year. And this was coming directly from his publicists and from his record label. So everybody took it as correct. And you can see charts from 10 or 15 years ago with people using false data for him. But then even once that was clarified, and that was like a deliberate sort of false piece of data that was put out by him, he later was under the mistaken impression that he was born in like Kansas City, Missouri. But in fact, later his mom wrote a sort of biography about him in which she pointed out that he was mistaken and that he was born in a town like 100 miles away somewhere else in Missouri. And and so even he didn't know his correct city of birth. And it was, I think even until very recently, until it was corrected just a few weeks ago when I submitted a correction, it was listed in AstroDataBank as the wrong city of birth, so that anybody who relied just on that would have been mistaken.
So in addition to that, and to emphasize your point, last year I attended the World Affairs Conference in Boulder, which is a political, scientific, cultural event of people prominent in their field. And one of the scientific panels I sat at, the topic came up about the Wikipedia entry of these scientists who are well known in their field. And they were all like, yeah, there's all this there's wrong information. And I even go on to try to fix it, and it's like rejected by the wiki editors.
Right.
So it's yeah, you have to take everything with a grain of salt. You know, even things you think would be fairly straightforward, like, oh, this guy's a prominent, you know, cancer researcher. Let me see what it says in Wikipedia. And they're just statements of false things in there that somehow got crept in there that are apparently not so easy to correct.
Sure. Yeah, I had an issue with that. I was using Kurt Cobain as an example for one of these lectures on the triplicity rulers for eminence and a specific timing technique last month in this lecture. And the Wikipedia article said that his parents got divorced at the age of when he was 7 years old. And this had a huge, profound effect on his life. And then it even had a citation, a footnote to back that up to one of the biographies written about him to validate that little factoid that was in his bio. But then I went and followed the link and it took me to Google Books where it had that specific page of the biography where it clearly said that his parents were born just after he turned 9 years old. So 2 years later. So even things that are stated in sometimes, you know, we're using right. Wikipedia as an example, but this can be true of other things as well.
Yes. Yes.
It's sort of like an example of a broader issue that you have to be careful about when you're working with celebrity charts that you might not run into as much if you're dealing with somebody who you can actually talk to and ask about their life or get documentation right. from them. But
right.
even things that are supposedly cited and sourced can sometimes right. be mistaken. Okay, so then there's a separate issue about so we're talking about the validity of the data, and I mentioned Eminem as a specific example of somebody who put out whose record company encouraged him to put it to say he was younger than he was. But then there may be this other separate issue, and it probably comes up more with politicians than anyone else, but it's possible as an issue with other people. But there's some politicians who are reputed to put out false data because they specifically don't want astrologers presumably to be able to look at their birth chart. So there's some people, at least, for example, Hillary Clinton is claimed to have put out different birth times deliberately because she's been asked many times over the years what time she was born, and it's not public information. So nobody truly knows what her birth time is, and she may have given different birth times to different people. So that's another issue that you run into, not with the biography, but just with getting accurate birth data from celebrities to begin with.
Right.
And
right.
sometimes you have to rely on, if they tell you their birth time, that's the best you can get. And sometimes if we can get that, that's really great. But right. sometimes that's not even reliable either, because the person could give you a false time deliberately, or they might not remember it correctly because normal people don't think about, you know, what time they were born.
Right.
There's all sorts of different reasons why even a word of mouth sort of birth time is not necessarily reliable.
Right.
So, yeah. So,
yeah, that's an issue.
So that's an issue. And that actually brings us to one of our other topics, which is just in the collection of birth data. One of the systems that's become widely used, which is the Rodin rating system, which is just, there was an astrologer named Lois Rodin who became very interested in birth data collection, and she built a huge database of
yep.
birth charts, both of celebrities and as well as normal people. And she used to publish books that had specific collections of birth charts, either of celebrities, but also of regular people, or sometimes just people that were grouped into specific categories, like people who had died violently or people who had life-threatening illness or what have you. She would divide them into different groups.
Uh-huh.
But eventually she developed this thing called the Rodin rating system, or that we call the Rodin rating system now. And it's not the best system, but it's the main system that everybody's using at this point, and it's good for people to familiarize themselves with. I mean, I usually try and use it. For example, like the Mountain Astrologer requires you to cite and to specifically state what the Rodin rating is of any birth data that you use in an article in the Mountain Astrologer. Do you use it, or do you usually cite it?
I pay attention to it. I guess I should start citing it. I mean, I don't use anything that's not AA.
Okay.
Well, yeah. That's just my unstated rule, but I guess in the articles I read I should be explicit about that, because I haven't been. But just as a point of reference, and even knowing that can be off, you know, I think writing trying to write an article or publishing a piece, there's nothing more frustrating to me than reading an article and getting to the end and seeing that it was an unknown birth time, or it was, you know, maybe we should go over the different levels. I mean, there's the birth certificate.
Well, or it was rectified. That's the best scenario, yeah. Right?
Or the rectified. In other words, the astrologer futzed with the birth time to get it to fit the point they wanted to make.
Right.
And
that's the worst instance. That's where you get to the end of the article and you just hold your head in your hands and you throw the article away from you across the room.
Yes.
Because you
can scream.
Right. Very dramatically. So because you can't use that. I mean, it's not, and that's probably a valid topic to have and debate to have in and of itself, which is that I always thought it was a given that it's really bad form to rectify a chart, and specifically to use a rectified chart in an article where you're trying to demonstrate some specific technique or some specific concept. And I always took that as a granted. I think you do as well. But I've run into actual astrologers. There are some astrologers, like I had a debate once with Axel Harvey, an astrologer from Montreal, who argues that you should rectify every chart, that every chart should be rectified, and no chart, no birth time, no matter where it comes from, is valid until you've rectified it. Because his point is that, for all we know, the birth time that's recorded could be wrong. And the only way to really validate that in his mind is to rectify it so that the chart works properly and that you don't have a correct chart until it, you know, quote unquote, works properly, whatever that means to you in terms of how you rectify charts.
Okay, so let's deconstruct that a bit. I think maybe there's a point in terms of dealing with your clients. You could maybe make that argument.
Sure.
But in any case that you want to have someone be able to, okay, now I'm going to get on my horse, so you might make sure I don't pull us too far off topic. But I would like, the state of research generally in astrology is very poor. That's my perception of it, but it's generally poor. And what the first step I think we need to take is to present our research in such a way that someone else, if they wanted to, could duplicate your results and come up presumably with the same thing. Mm-hmm. And when someone is rectifying every chart they're using as an example, unless I know exactly what their rectification methodology is so that I would arrive at the exact same, you know, rectified time they are, it's pointless for me to incorporate that into my own research. At least if we're agree to use AA data or the best data, we're generally going to be in the ballpark of what's right. But I mean, there is a point. Someone has on their birth certificate they were born at 3:43 p.m. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that someone looked at the clock and saw that, but when they looked is the issue. You know, was it a few minutes after birth, or was the clock off? You know, that's why I've introduced kind of a new, this will be my first public presentation of it, but I have a small set of data that I call AA plus, which is the birth was witnessed by someone whose watch had been synchronized to the atomic clock in Colorado within the last day. And so at least we know exactly what time that person was born.
Nice.
And we have the ability and the technology. I mean, there's no reason why that can't be the norm. You know, if astrology gets more popular and parents are paying more attention, there's no reason why that can't be the norm. I mean, there are clocks now that automatically adjust themselves to the atomic clock, you know, through radio waves and whatnot. I mean, there's no reason for us not to have super accurate times now, but at least have AA. I mean, if someone is like, oh, I did this research on 100 charts and I rectified each one and these are the results I came up with, again, how am I going to duplicate that work unless I know the exact methodology of rectification that doesn't involve judgment calls so that I can arrive at the exact same rectifications that the original researcher did?
Well, I mean, and even if you do know the exact methodology, it's a pretty high likelihood that you won't agree with the rectification because different astrologers use different techniques and place different emphasis on different variables because of the different schools of astrology and partially due to the lack of standardization of astrological techniques.
I mean, I know an astrologer who does rectification, not every chart, but people who pay him to rectify, you know, maybe they have kind of an unknown birth time and they pay him for rectification. And when he arrives at his rectification, he says, now look, if a year from now you find your birth chart and it's different from this time, I'm going to say we stick with this time because the events of your life so fit this, and you know, and the few especially if predictions made about the future, which is a really weird thing. I mean, that's not necessarily something I would do. I kind of go with, hey, if we find out that you were born at such and such a time, let's use that, even if it's quote unquote harder for me as an astrologer. Yeah. I mean, we want to. This is what I think is great. The conference coming up on divination and astrology, I think it would be great to have a podcast where we discuss, you know, divination versus science, mm-hmm. because astrology, I think, does straddle both of those things. But if we're going to be able to, you know, if you do some sort of research project and I read it, it would be nice that it was written in such a way that if I wanted to duplicate your work, I could.
Sure. Right.
You know, and find out if, yeah, I got the same results Chris did, or I thought I should introduce other variables and I got this other result. You know, at the bare minimum, again, anyone out there who's doing research, when you publish it, please publish it with sufficient detail that someone else, if they wanted to, could try to duplicate it.
Sure. Really quickly, I guess, since we've mentioned it a few times, let's just go through the Rodin rating system really briefly so that people who may not be familiar with it understand what we're talking about. So the highest level is AA data or AA data, which is evidently either data, birth data that comes from the birth certificate itself or from some other record that was written at the time of the individual's birth, like a birth record, like a note. That
baby book entry. I've had a lot of birth times where it was like the person had like a baby book and it was written so-and-so was born at such and such a time.
Yeah. I got hold of, President, Ford's birthday book recently in order to confirm his birth time. And that's where it was recorded. Whereas, for Nixon, actually, this is a problem because I was researching all the presidential data to see who presidents over the last century, who he had birth times for and who he didn't, or who the birth time was not, was kind of sketchy. And Nixon was actually listed as being from his birth certificate, but then I found where his birth time was actually recorded, and it was a note. It was a handwritten note on a little scrap of paper that was written by the nurse who was there when he was born, and it was published, like a photograph of that scrap of paper was published in a biography that somebody who was working for, like, writing a very favorable biography who wanted him to get elected in one of the 1960s elections wrote about him. So it was like the family sanctioned sort of book that was published about him. So, and that's kind of different, like knowing whether it comes from the birth certificate or whether it's something that's being put out there by the candidate themselves as their birth time.
Right.
And anyway, but either of those would count, like a birth certificate or something written at the time of birth. Next in the hierarchy is just A data, which is said to be data that's from memory, usually from the individual stating that they think they were born around this time, or that their parents say that they were born, that they remember the person being born around that time, or sometimes from news reports. So it's not from the birth certificate, but it's from a news report that says the person was born around some specific time. Next is B data, which is from a biography or an autobiography about the person. For example, I think Bill Gates's widely used birth data comes from a biography that was written in the early 90s by him, although there's some conflicts over whether that's correct. C data is
autobiography. Written by him, you said.
Or sorry, it was written by somebody else. It was just a biography.
Okay.
Yeah. C data is used with caution because the original source is unknown. Or the data is thought to have been rectified. So for some reason, there's a lot of rectified data that's mentioned in the notes in Astro Data Bank, and this kind of bothers me because it's a little bit worthless to have hundreds of different astrologers' notes about what time that they rectify it. But that's C data. Then there's double D data, which is dirty data, where the origin is muddy, the source is unreliable, or there are multiple times, two or more birth times that are recorded. X data is a date without a time. Double X data is the date itself is in question, or there are two or more variations of the date. And that's it as far as the Rodin rating system goes.
Right. So let me ask you this, and you may not know the answer to this, but if I take a DD chart and rectify it. And people like my rectification. Does that elevate it to sea level?
Which is that? No, I mean, it would still be. I think there was a little bit more leeway for some reason for rectification prior to the past 10 years. Like, I don't think they're accepting rectified data now.
Okay.
And they never really used that. I mean, because there were some people like, I think that category is theirs because there were some people like Joan Quigley, who was Reagan's personal astrologer in the 1980s,
right,
and she rectified his chart and used a specific time. So there's that kind of elevates it a little bit because there's a specific
reason. Yeah, your astrologer rectified the chart and continue to work with you. I can see where that would come in at a C level. And you're starting with AA, A, or B info to begin with, usually, right? I mean, rarely are you going to have someone say, gee, I have no idea when I was born.
Well, yeah, hopefully. I mean, ideally.
Hopefully.
There are people, I mean, that happens.
Yes. I've had a few calls from people like that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't usually personally do charts without birth times because so many of my techniques are so time dependent.
Yeah.
I do rectification. I have started doing that, or I've been doing that for several years now, but I only rectify charts where, you know, they have some general idea that it was within a few hours during that day, so that it's really just a choice, especially since I use whole sign houses, of narrowing it down to the correct rising sign. Those are the types of rectifications I'll do, just because then that limits the variables that you have to deal with. Whereas in a 24-hour period, you mean there are a lot of potential charts that could fit the person's life,
right?
Because like every 12 hours, you'll have an exact reversal of the chart. So it's obvious why you can get conflict.
I think we should also say, in defense of rectification, that there are some charts that are, quote, easy to rectify, that there's a big astrological change in a relatively small amount of time, and it's very easy. You know, if the person turned out to be a baker instead of a candlestick maker, you know, then, and you know, especially if the person's lived and they're in adulthood and you're like, oh, is your life more like this or that? Oh, it's much more like that. So some of these where they're like a rising sign changes, it becomes relatively easy to rectify. And other charts are really hard to rectify because it's not such a clear cut difference over the time span that's in question.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely the case. Okay, so back to our main topic.
Yes, please.
Let me see where we left off. So, so some celebrities have put out false data, possibly.
So question everything, but, you know, we do the best we can with what we have. That celebrity charts typically exemplify certain points easier because that's why they're famous. That's why they rose up. That's why they become known to everyone in the world or a significant, you know, population. Mm-hmm. And my argument for the ordinary chart is that, yes, they are harder to read, but because of that, your skill as an astrologer, you know, if you're wanting to do readings for regular people, is enhanced by having you sharpen your judgment because you're having to sort through typically more factors and it's a little more complicated.
Sure. And definitely with people, you know, especially people that are close to, if you're talking about like a boyfriend or a girlfriend or like a brother or sister, a family member or close friend, you know, and if you're spending a lot of time around that person, you know, the nuances of their life. And there's something fascinating about following a person's chart and looking at their transits or seeing, you know, just knowing the person and seeing their life play out and seeing how their chart fits them in sometimes very subtle ways that is a lot more striking and a lot more informative or educational than, you know, just looking at some celebrity and looking at, you know, that Miley Cyrus has been in the news recently for something and then speculating about what transits are coinciding with that or what have you.
Right.
When you really know very little about the nuances of her life and what's happening right now.
Right.
So that's definitely one of the major pluses in terms of personal charts, is just the ability to study very subtle and nuanced things and to get a sense for the person's chart and how those placements work out or how certain timing techniques, because there's also sometimes very subtle things that occur in a person's life that you would overlook if you were a biographer or if you're somebody standing outside of it.
Right.
But if you're a lot closer to it, you can actually notice it and see it in person and realize what that's correlating with.
So can I bring up the ethical dimension of this? So some astrologers occasionally will talk about how ethical is it to analyze charts of celebrities and whatnot. And then when you use ordinary charts, have you gotten permission from your clients or wherever you gotten the data from to be able to share that with other astrologers? And let me start this by saying, imagine the world of tomorrow, where astrology is much more dialed in to the culture. I mean, is it possible that there could be some sort of HIPAA law for astrologers where now birth data is protected private information, like medical information is now, and that it's only released, is it really – in a world that took astrology seriously, you would have – like we think some politicians are doing now, like Hillary Clinton, releasing different times, obfuscating it. We may not have the luxury of having the access that we do now.
This is a weird area because of there's a bit of a contradiction really in the astrological community right now when it comes to this, because on the one hand, about in the past 10 years, all of the major astrological organizations have adopted ethics guidelines, and one of those that they're very specific on is that client confidentiality, and that you're not allowed to share client birth data without their permission. So there's a sort of privacy clause built into the ethics rules that most astrologers agree to adopt when they join one of these organizations. And it's generally known. I mean, that's generally a rule. It's almost like an unspoken rule that it's pretty straightforward. But then on the other hand, when it comes to celebrities, not because they're not clients, so obviously some people can explain that away as a result of that because you're not dealing with them privately. But astrologers seem to have this different, or they seem to treat celebrities the same way that maybe it's just a cultural thing, because culturally it seems like we treat celebrities, once a person becomes quote unquote a celebrity or becomes famous for something, we treat them as if they're personal, that they don't have a personal life, or that their personal life is now subject to the public domain for some reason.
Yeah, they sacrifice that for fame.
Right.
But I'm wondering if famous people took astrology seriously, again, the world of tomorrow where astrology is taken more seriously, if they would be like, hell, I'm not putting that data out there.
Sure.
I don't want to pick up the Mountain Astrologer and see some, analysis of my career. It is kind of interesting that that divide. I mean, we think, well, hey, they released their birth data, so it's all fair game. But the people that are releasing their birth data don't know. It's not like they know that I'm asking you your birth time so I can, publish your info in the astro data bank so that astrologers can play with it till the end of time.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of them know and some of them most probably don't know. But that is an interesting ethical debate that it seems like I don't feel like is talked about, because there's this just general acceptance that celebrity birth data, that astrologers try and get a hold of it, and it's kind of fair game.
Right.
Probably due to the general treatment of celebrities in terms of their personal lives. And that might be worth thinking about as sort of an ethical or philosophical issue, where to draw the line when it comes to the use of celebrity birth charts and when that's appropriate and when it's not, or what have you.
Now, in reviewing the literature, Valens' 10 volumes, how many celebrity charts were in there versus charts of ordinary people?
Several, but he doesn't say. Like, that's what's funny now in retrospect, is there's been, over the past century since Valens has been recovered from his textbook from the second century, people have actually had to research and have noticed, like Holden pointed out, that one of these charts where he just mentions it casually as like an example of eminence happens to be like one of the Roman emperors. And then Valens doesn't say that. He just says, this person did this and he was born on this date. And it happens to be the date that, I forget which emperor it was, but it was one of the, it was like Nero or somebody.
Yeah.
So, and that was also, but the, you know, there's issues there because it became outlawed because the astrologers were making public predictions about like the death of emperors and stuff. And the emperors eventually got kind of annoyed by this and outlawed and banned astrologers from doing that several times during the course of the Roman Empire. And so there's a little tension there as well in terms of the laws surrounding that.
One of the cultural differences I've noticed in contemporary astrology books, American and English versus Indian 20th century, 21st century textbooks, is that we tend to, in our books, do famous people. I mean, there might be a few ordinary people thrown in there, but the bulk of the examples tend to be famous in most of the books I come across. And yet, when you look at the Indian literature, number one, there'll be dozens and dozens and dozens of example charts in a typical book, and many of them will be ordinary people, with maybe a few politicians, you know, a few other, a few well-knowns in there, but there'll be like many, many ordinary people. But there'll be, it's interesting, they tend to have a lot more example charts. A lot more. I mean, when I was working on my thesis, which was looking at how relationship astrology is practiced in India and here in contemporary times and the cultural differences, I noticed that in relationship books, I mean, there would be scores. I mean, sometimes 100 example charts in a book that was only 120 pages. And there was nothing like that number of example charts in the West.
Sure.
So that's just kind of an interesting cultural difference there. But
yeah, I mean, if you committed yourself to using the charts of like clients, for example, then you would have a lot more charts to use versus if you're using celebrity charts, then it's going to be a little bit more sparing since it's a more limited data pool.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's cultural or what that is in terms of why that difference is, or maybe it's just a tendency because for quite a while now in Western astrology, celebrity charts have been a prominent piece of sort of textbooks. So yeah. If that's just a part of the tradition that's been continued or what that is.
And I have no idea. I mean, my guess is that the Indian astrologer is not asking the client. I mean, I could be totally wrong on this, but my impression is, I mean, when I've had readings in India from Indian astrologers, no one said, oh, by the way, can I use your chart as a teaching example? I mean, no one like ever asked me about that.
Sure.
But that is something I do ask my clients.
Yeah.
Can I use your chart in this if I withhold, you know, your name or whatever? And oftentimes I get a yes. You know, it's rare that someone says, no, I want this kept confidential. I'm like, fine. And I mark it as such.
Right. Yeah, I feel the same way, or that's usually what I do, is just ask them and make sure it's sort of documented that they're okay with that.
Yeah.
And also not to like pressure them into that, because some people don't want their chart out there. I mean, there's astrologers that don't necessarily want their chart out there.
yes, there are.
Right. So that, I mean, that's, you know, even a thing in and of itself that ties into this as a sort of piece in terms of this debate over, you know, celebrity charts versus personal charts, and then whether all celebrity charts are fair game, you know, is everyone's chart fair game, and are astrologers' charts fair game as well, if that's the case. Yeah, there's a lot of little nuances and details surrounding this.
Yes.
All right. Well, were there any other major points? Where did we come to with this debate about celebrity charts or personal charts? I believe you were conceding the point that I was right and that you were going to start using celebrity charts more, right?
No. I think I was I think we came to a draw, or that there's a place for both.
Okay, my mistake.
And in the ideal world, well, okay, maybe we should each answer this question. So in my ideal world, if I'm trying to get a point across, I might go, okay, here's an example of how you would see wealth. Let's look at Bill Gates' chart, see how obvious that is. Now I'm going to give you three charts of ordinary people that are wealthy, but not on the level of Bill Gates. And how do we arrive at that judgment?
Right.
Because, again, it's just, I think you learn a lot more astrology doing charts than reading books. And I would argue you learn a lot more astrology by trying to really understand the charts of ordinary people, because they're just harder to read. And so getting a skill at that will make you, I would argue, a better astrologer.
Sure. Yeah, and I mean, I definitely just recommend both, and that's where I'm going at this point, is kind of half and half, maybe. Since sometimes the celebrities, for all the, you know, there's all those pros and cons, and then there's many pros and cons for private charts as well, and sometimes it's useful. I mean, especially for me, doing Hellenistic astrology and talking about, like, eminence techniques, or talking about Time Lord techniques that are supposed to show peak periods in a person's career or what have you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that really is helpful to have a really striking example of that, where a person becomes famous, like, all over the world, and that's not, like, debatable, or it's somebody that everybody knows became famous at this specific point when they did this specific thing.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Chris. So should I even bother learning eminence? Because what's the likelihood of me getting a client that's going to somehow rise to worldwide eminence? I mean, is that a technique that's only, okay, so you get 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000, you know, that becomes super eminent? Or is the eminence kind of defined culturally, where in someone's field or neighborhood or village, that the chart shows the prominence within the context of where they are in their life?
Yeah, I mean, I think it means different things. There's a certain, like, relativity to it, or it is relative to a certain extent, like, especially with the timing techniques, like with zodiac releasing, and you see somebody hit a career peak period, you know, you see one person hit that, and he's Al Gore, and he just became the vice president of the United States in 1992 or whatever, 1994. Versus you see somebody else hit that, and I mean, I have a specific example in mind of a client, but it's not probably a good example, because they're like a doctor, and they became the head of a hospital recently.
Well, so that's good.
That's not like a world-renowned, like, person who became... Right.
But within the context of their life and their field, they became prominent.
Yes, and they hit a career peak period and became eminent within their own field, whatever that is. I mean... And you see that. I mean, you see that happening also, you know, with people that work at, like, a fast food joint, a fast food restaurant, and hitting a peak period and becoming, like, employee of the month or something. I mean, it is relative to the person's life oftentimes, but you do get those unique instances where the person goes on to do something extraordinary, and it's worth, I think, being able to identify that.
So you're conceding the point that the charts of ordinary people equally illustrate the eminence principle.
Well, they do within the context of certain techniques, yes, like zodiac releasing,
yes,
where,
yes,
it's specifically designed not to show eminence per se, but peak periods relative to the person's career
and life
direction. With other techniques, okay, like, you know, the triplicity rulers of the sect light, which is more eminence oriented. I'm not sure that you do necessarily. It is as relative, but that technique gets some of the eminence techniques, unfortunately, get mixed in with techniques that are supposed to show the stability and support and level of good fortune that the person has. So that's kind of problematic, because sometimes when you're looking at it in the context of a normal person's life, it's just how stable or supportive their environment tends to be in that specific part of their life.
Right.
Versus whether they actually become eminent.
Yeah.
So it's a little mixed there, I guess. But I would concede that there's some level of it being relative to who the person is and what their context is.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I guess then we've been talking about an hour, so I guess we can wrap up this episode of the show, unless you have any other thoughts about this topic.
I think we've exhausted it for now.
Okay.
And I think we've explored the pros and cons of everything, and I think we've arrived that there's a place for both. And I think we both agree that if you're going to write an article, please don't use rectified charts.
Yes, please don't
to make your point.
And the worst thing also that an astrologer could do, because I've seen some astrologers do this, is rectify the chart and then pass it off as a legitimate birth time that was recorded or something like
that. Oh, yeah. Well, that's like, just lying.
Right. I mean, that's not cool. So, yeah, that's bad times. So, all right. Well, I'm sure there's something I've forgotten or something I meant to mention. There's probably other additional points and arguments that people could make. So anyone listening to this show, we'd love to hear feedback. So please post some comments in the comments section of the page on the astrologypodcast.com that contains this episode and let us know what you think, or if you incline towards using celebrity charts or personal charts, and if there's any specific arguments that might be made in favor of one approach or the other. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of the show. Thanks for coming on, Kenneth. I hope to have you on again in the future to talk about some other topics.
Yes, thanks for having me. It was great, and I'd be happy to come back.
Okay, awesome. All right, well, that's it for this episode of the Astrology Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of the show, make sure to subscribe by email by putting in your email address in the sidebar where it says subscribe, and then you'll get the next episode of the show delivered to your inbox, or at least a link to it, a notification. And if you're listening to this on iTunes, then please give the show a 5-star rating and let other people know that you enjoyed it. So that's it for this episode of the Astrology Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.